depths of Wandering Heart. But he went up north for a fortnight and, idly, at the turning of the year, I fell in love with our friend Jarvo, the bludger, just back from getting off dope in Hobart. I looked at his burnt skin and scarred nose and violently blue eyes. We sat together in the theatre, Gracie on my knee. He put his hand to the back of my head. We looked at each other and would have gone home together without a word being spoken. But on our way out of the theatre, we met Martin rushing in, back from Disaster Bay. Decorously, Jarvo got on his bike and rode home. Not a matter of decorum, though, with Martin, who said to me shyly, knowing perhaps in his bones that nothing would be the same again, "I wish I could, you know, turn you on." And he did, and somehow we loved each other. I held his sharp, curly little head very tightly in my arms. We slept peacefully, knowing each other well enough not to need to touch. I woke in the morning and heard at the same moment a rooster crow in a backyard and a clock strike in a house in Woodhead Street. I walked through our house. In the rooms, people slept singly in double beds, nothing over them but a sheet, brown faces on still pillows. Gracie and Eve's boy, the roaster, sprawled in their bunks. A glass fish tinked at their window. I put the kettle on to make the coffee, stared out the louvers of the kitchen window at the rough grass and the sky already hot blue. At the Fitzroy Baths, Martin and Jarvo lolled on the burning concrete. I clowned in the water at the deep end, where the sign read Aqua Profonda. "The others are waiting for me up at Disaster Bay," said Martin. "I'm going back today. Why don't yous two come with me?" "Okay," said Jarvo, who had nothing else to do, his life being a messy holiday of living off his friends. "Nora?" I rolled and rolled in the water, deafening my ears while I thought of and discarded all the reasons why I shouldn't go. I popped up, hanging onto the rail, hair streaming on my neck. "Okay, I'll come." Jarvo was looking at me. So afterwards, it is possible to see the beginning of things, the point at which you had already plunged in, while at the time you thought you were only testing the water with your toe. We picked Gracie up from her kinder and left Melbourne that afternoon. By the time we'd crossed the border into New South Wales, it was well into night. The camp where the others were waiting for the supplies Martin had brought was a mile from the end of the track, round a rocky beach. It was dark, and the tide was right in against the rocks. I picked up Gracie, who was too scared to speak, and waded blindly after Martin's voice. I was soon wet to the thighs. Whenever a wave withdrew, invisible crabs clattered round my feet on the spiky rocks. I could dimly see Jarvo ahead of me with his boots over his shoulder. My ears were full of confusion and the sea thumping. Martin helped me scramble up the last slope, Gracie clinging like a monkey to my back. And in the sudden quiet between waves, I saw the gleam of the tent in a small hollow. We stumbled in. The others woke in a mass of rugs and sleeping bags. "Did you bring anything to eat?" I recognised Lou's voice. "I couldn't carry it over the rocks," lied Martin, who had forgotten it in his haste to bring us to the place. "We expected you yesterday, mate," complained Lou gently. "All we've got left is fucking flour. Where have you been?" People were sitting up among the blankets. We got used to the dark. "I got held up," said Martin, already having forgotten the problem and pulling his jeans off, ready to sleep on his full stomach. "You are a little weasel," Lou sighed. He turned over and went back to sleep. In a shop window in Marimbula, I saw my face reflected and gave myself a fright. My hair was wild and stiff with salt, standing on end all over my head. My face was burnt almost back to paleness, and my eyes stared out of dirty skin. I liked myself. I looked strong and healthy. But Martin was unhappy, and to my shame, I was not concerned with kindness. One morning, when the others had gone into Eden to buy food, I squatted on the wet sand between two boulders and rolled sandballs with the children. We rolled and rolled, hypnotised, thrusting the sandballs into the ancient pitted surface of the rocks, singing private songs to ourselves. The sun struck the backs of our necks and shoulders, burnt already brown as leather. We sang and rolled and sang, naked and sweaty. Up on top of the rock sat Lou, with his leather-bound Oxford English verse. He declaimed softly to the elements, a small smile of emotion trembling on and off his narrow, mournful